You are a vibe wizard, and I think that's one of my favorite things about what you do. You care about the vibe. It's not just about the notes.
It's all a package. No matter what, we all, I think it's really important to hang on to our, you know, our individuality. That's what makes us who we are.
Welcome, friends, to episode 27 of River of Suck podcast. Today, we have a vibe wizard, one of my favorite vibe wizards in the multiverse. And her name is Martha Mook. She's joining us today from New Jersey, and she is an incredible artist who plays music, especially with electric viola. Please make welcome Martha Mook. Thanks for joining us.
Yay. Cue applause.
We just heard it.
Awesome. Okay. Nice to be here. Thank you. Thanks, Andy.
You're here on this podcast today to talk about your music, but also your feelings. So
I have a lot of both.
That is great news. Who is Martha Mook, and how did you get here?
Well, we'd have to go back about 59 years or so, and you can ask my mother all the specifics about that, but let's jump ahead.
Okay, fast forward.
Oh, it's been a long journey, actually. Really, if you know, you had asked me when I was just graduating from college that I would be back sort of full circle in a way, I probably would have just smacked you or something. I have nothing. I've always been an educator, but I needed to go through 30 some odd years of being a professional violist, creative instigator, avant. And just always following my instincts and my dreams and my heart. And they've taken me to some pretty awesome places, and including here today.
Yeah. How would you describe what you do when you pick up your electric viola?
Oh, it unleashes a whole universe of sound.
No doubt.
I guess I've created my voice, my palette of sound. And again, it's taken years. Is when I first started out, when I first realized that I was interested in playing electric viola, which I owe it all to Jean-Luc Ponty, mentor. And really, that was my aha moment when I first heard his recording of Taste for Passion back in the 80s. And I knew that it just blew my mind. I always say we didn't have emojis back in those days, but if we did, it would have been the one that the head is exploding. Really, I still remember that. I'm like, what? A string instrument can sound like that, can play jazz, can improvise, can use electronics. How is that? And that started my exploration. So, and back in those days, it was analog. It was not digital. And we had, you know, you had to get monster size equipment. It wasn't just
sure.
At the tip of your toes. So I went through a lot of generations of different experimenting with different effects units and finding my sound. And I realized pretty quickly that I like using a looper. And then I realized even quicker that I like to find out what the equipment is not good at doing. And then I make it do something it doesn't think it's supposed to do.
Whoa. Amazing.
And so as a looper, I do. Sometimes I do conventional loops, but oftentimes I'll do really unconventional loops.
Nice. As you know, I'm a huge proponent of looping and using that in practice and performance. So, yes, another good one for the looping team. I have to ask you one more kind of bio question, which is just that, you know, I used to play in a band with a beatboxer, and the beatboxer that my friend Steve Fox, the beatbox, always held up is like the true greatest of all time was Rozelle. And then I turn around and there's Martha Mook playing with Rozelle. So I just want to hear, I want everyone to know about this. What is this project? How can we hear it? What is that all about?
Yeah. So the name of the project that we co-wrote is called Beats Per Revolution. And the short story of the long story is we met we met at Carnegie Hall, I don't know, probably 10 years ago or so, at the Tibet House benefit concerts that are produced by Philip Glass. And I've been playing those for the last 22 years or so. But they always get these amazing... Philip has a way of finding this talent from all over the place that doesn't... you might not normally think would play at Carnegie Hall.
Right.
And so I've played with some really amazing people there, and one of them was Rozelle. And it's all a big, you get together the day before the show and you come in with some of your own stuff, and then it's all about collaborations. And Rozelle and I got to talking, and he loved that I had my string quartet there, Scorchio. And he'd never sung with a string quartet before, and we'd never played with a beatboxer before. And we're like, what do we do? And so we improvised. and it was awesome. We did it in a backstage, and then we did it on stage at Carnegie Hall.
Casual. We met at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah. So, and then we just kept in touch, and we hit it off. And then a couple of years down the road, I got approached by Symphony Space in New York City to do a commissioned work for them. And I thought, you know what, this would be a great opportunity to do collaboration with Rozelle. And so I got the word beat was germinating in my brain, and I came up with all sorts of connotations and representations of what beat is or could be or has been. And so that's all in the score. There is a written score, and it's interesting because Rozelle does not read music.
Wow, yeah.
But he has learned how to follow the score, and I've created a way that he knows where we are in the score. There's five sections, and it's basically using the word beats, as in beats per revolution comes from beats per minute, revolutions per minute, beats as in heartbeats, beats as in a beat of a drum that leads a revolution, the beat generation. So one of the movements is dedicated to Gunther Schuller and his third stream music. So a combination of jazz and classical. And then there's some movements we collaborated together, and then it's Rozelle does a really cool rap kind of hip-hop solo thing with drums. So anyway, we did it at Symphony Space, and then we've done it as a duo. We've just excerpted it over the years. And just this past spring, we had the opportunity to do a full production at New Jersey City University and with another amazing band, because it's for string quartet, it's for winds, bass, and drums, and samples.
Epic.
And beatboxing and electric viola.
Yes, yes.
So we got to perform it, and at Jersey City, and then we also performed it at the Cutting Room in New York City.
Cool.
It's one of the really cool nightclubs there.
That's amazing. Well, it's time to dive into the River of Suck. Do you have your swim trunks? Here we go.
I just ordered them from L.L. Beans. Yeah.
Perfect. So this is an analogy. The River of Suck is an imaginary river that runs through your mind, also through your body. You're on one side of the River of Suck. You're on your comfort shore. Behind you is your comfort cave. This is where we do all the things we already know how to do. Comfort zone, things that are easy. On the other side, we can see on that distant shore, teeny little versions of ourselves who can do the things that we wish we could do now. But right now they seem impossible. In between us and the other side is the raging River of Suck, which is filled with rocks, whitewater rapids, and most devastatingly, the thought piranhas, which represent all of the negative thoughts that come in and try and sabotage our good vibe. Things like self-doubt. Am I good enough? What will they think of me? All that weird inner monologue that just natters on as you're trying to focus, gets in your way with all these weird side tricks that try to downward spiral you into drowning in that river. So the basic idea is you have to suck at something before you can be good at it. And if we can take little tiny incremental steps, little individual swim strokes, we can actually reach that side. Or if we have a good plan, maybe we could build a raft and we could use our paddles and we get there without so much water going down our throats. Let's start with the thought piranhas. What thought piranhas do you experience?
I think it's very natural to, it's human to have these doubts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there are a few people that don't have doubts, and there's names for that. But I'm constantly thinking, am I real? What is what I'm doing of benefit? And that's the danger when you get in your head. And that's, when people go off on retreats or they do long distance climbs or things, and they have to train not only their bodies, but their minds.
Right.
And I do, because I know it could be something screwy that happened. It could be I just woke up and I'm maybe feeling a little bit down that day, because the body is organic.
Yeah.
And it's subject to all kinds of things, weather, pressure, temperature, other types of whatever.
Factors, parameters, experience, moments. Yeah.
So the one thing that I do have is faith. And that is, no matter how bad I feel or how much I doubt, I know that the next day things will be better, or I take a walk, I take a shower. I take a lot of showers. It's a good diffusion when I need to get out of my head.
Yeah.
It often happens also when I'm writing a piece of music and I just don't know how it ends. And I have to stop, even if I have the premiere that night. And just have the faith that it's gonna resolve itself, and it always has. It always has.
Wow.
That's not to say I don't ever go back and revise things, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
But faith. I have to think that your believing in yourself has come also from years of practice and experience, right? You are an improviser, and that goes beyond just music, it's situations. Because we play string instruments, we've been in the same space. You seem like you're really grounded and you're really confident and you know exactly what's going to happen. And what you know is going to happen is spontaneous. I've seen you do this with students where you help make them believe in themselves where they don't have that belief yet. So How do you get to that point where you can just go for it and trust that something good is going to happen? I guess what a lot of people have a problem with is like accepting what happens as being good when you don't know what it's going to be, right?
Well, I think you don't have to say whether it's good or not. Mm. It's different. And really, that was kind of a mantra I had for the last 2.5 years when we were going through the pandemic. And that was a total improvisation. From, that very first day that things shut down. And what I tell my students, what I tell everybody, and it is how I feel about it, when things are going along and then something screwy happens, like inevitably, if you're working with electronics, something's going to go screwy, or you're going to hit the wrong pedal, or something won't work, or the lights will go out, or whatever. And you have a choice at that moment to... You can have a fit and, stomp your feet and roll your eyes and run, walk off stage or run off stage. And, or you can turn it around, reframe it and consider it a moment, an opportunity to go in another direction. And I guess it's everything needs practice. So you're not going to wake up one day and feel totally comfortable with that. But if you're in that situation enough, you learn to trust yourself and know that something's going to work out. And sometimes it ends up being, wow, I didn't know that would happen. And I really like what happened, and so something new can come of it. And so it's never an awful situation. I mean, even if in the middle of a concert, a string breaks. Well, that wasn't intentional. String breaks. So what are you going to do? You have to pause the festivities for the moment. That's what makes live events so. So multidimensional and so integral and something that we missed so much also when we were only about Zooming and not about being in the same room. That's where the vibe thing comes in. And that's where when I work with students, when I work with teachers, classical musicians, when I start off my improv sessions, I always say the fastest way to get a classically trained musician to stop playing is to tell them to improvise. And that's the truth. So how do you overcome that? Is that's, like jazz musicians, that's what they're trained to do that, but not just jazz musicians, but in so many other cultures as well. And you learn the language, you learn the scales, you learn the harmonies. But when you're coming from a different, let's say, atmosphere of improvisation, and the way that I consider it and the way that I work with people is to, it's an inner adventure. An inner journey to the creative soul, where it's not as necessary to know the exact notes that fit in a scale or that have to fit exactly in with whatever anybody else is playing. But you have to take that first step and just know that everybody has something inside of them, and that's... I attempt to create a safe place. And oftentimes I'll make some really crazy sounds and I'll sound really awful and out of tune and terrible, and you know, kids will look around and like, what just happened? But to put everybody on the same playing field, and if that's sitting in a circle and closing your eyes or turning off the lights or however to get, because there's going to be some people more comfortable with it, some people less comfortable. And it's also, it's an individual situation. You have to, not, you know, everybody responds differently. Everybody experiences differently. They learn differently. And so you can't just go in and here's improvisation and everybody's going to learn improvisation the same way, because that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
You can teach it, but not everybody's going to absorb it the same way or get it or understand it or interpret it. And that's another level of, I don't know if you call it education or observation, I think, that I add to it. And I guess maybe it makes the process a little longer, but I think it's really important because everybody is unique, and I think it's really important when a teacher, when a mentor, when a grown up, and can take the time to understand that and consider that, and it really, I found that it really pays off because it opens up communication, it opens up trust, it can be pretty amazing. I had it happen this semester in one of my classes that I was teaching improvisation, and it's called The Creative Mind and Improvisation. And it was an honors class, and there was only one musician in the room. And they had no idea what, they thought maybe I was going to have them like learn Shakespeare and whatever. We went to so many different places inside and of themselves, and I introduced them to different concepts and ways of thinking about things, and in the end, they was like a safe place. They loved coming to class. They could express themselves. They had never really felt like they had a place to express themselves, and that in turn informs everything else that they do.
Yeah. It seems to me like your comfort zone is the same as what a lot of other people are terrified of. So what's your comfort zone?
My comfort zone. Well, in this space where I am right now, it's very important that the vibe around me. I mean, I bring my little sparkly lights with me wherever I go, and I've actually created the studio at New Jersey City University. One of the first thing I did was bring in these lights and Yoda and all kinds of other things that you don't usually necessarily find in a rehearsal space or
They're missing it. Why is it so clinical everywhere?
Right. Well, there you go. It's not a doctor's office. And so if you want to access another dimension, that's what really I keep saying, you know, multidimensional, but
yeah,
you need to have the space. You need to have the aura, the vibe around you, and I encourage everybody that I work with to do that. I mean, I'm like, just sit down on the floor, you know, be comfortable, turn out the lights, start from there. You know, it doesn't matter if you're playing practicing your scales or an etude, or if you're just trying to find your voice, start from a new place.
Hmm. That sounds important. Are you listening, listener? This is important stuff.
So, Andy, I want you to turn out your lights right now and light some candles. And
you play some pretty psychedelic out there music, right? There's been a lot of history of musicians using alcohol and drugs to get to that point. From what I see in you, like, living and demonstrating, it doesn't look to me like you believe that any of that's necessary to get to the outer dimension. So I'm wondering, like, how do you turn off those thought piranhas to get into that new space in a sober way?
Well, that's a lot of assumptions there, but I'm going to just keep going.
Well,
no, but I, yes, I'm, you know, like Berlioz needed and Sherlock Holmes need whatever. No, I can get in the zone. And in fact, I would say probably, yeah, you're probably right. I'm pretty sober when I compose, because part of it is that I'm working usually with a lot of dimensions, with electronics and with my instrument, and you got to kind of know where you are, otherwise, you know, you fall off the bridge, as it were. When I'm composing, usually it's concept based. And I'll just do some exploring of sounds and come upon sounds and ideas that I want to explore. And a lot of that also comes in with the actual electronics and effects processors that I use. And you know, it's important for me. It's taken me many, many years to create my sound, and it's important because it's not just the instrument that I play. And that was something that was really pointed out many, many, many years ago when I first started out. I was trying to get my music played on the radio. John Schaefer's New Sounds show on WNYC. And I sent him my tapes and things, and he's like, well, I never really liked the sound of electric violin before. And I said, me too. And so that's why I'm working so hard on getting my sound to be not just what comes out of the instrument, but the whole instrument is everything between myself and where the sound comes out. So it's a lot of quality control. And so, you know, I play good quality instruments. I use good quality electronics and effects, and it's also the way that I have figured out how to use them, cool. Like playing stereo, like filling up a space, and not having to play a bazillion notes. I don't have to play a bazillion notes to get the idea out there.
You're like the Miles Davis of the electric viola.
I'll take it.
Going back to what you were talking about earlier, I'd love for you to redefine mistakes for us, because so much of improvisation is acceptance and moving forward rather than looking back with a lens of, oh, that was wrong. Like, what is a mistake? Are they real?
It depends on the context, really. I won't mention a name, but I one time had the opportunity to play with an amazing guitar player who's known for playing really fast and and just lots and lots of notes and incredible, and it's perfect all the time. And we were in this program together, and he invited me to play something with him, and I stayed up all night to learn this piece, and I played it with him, and that's not my comfort zone, what he does. And so I did the best that I could, and I thought I did pretty well. And we got off stage, and the only thing he said to me was, "I heard that, Clam." I think that it didn't ruin my day. It just made me think that that's not so important to what I need to be doing. That I worked so hard, I did the best that I could. That's not my wheelhouse, and all they could say was, "I heard that, Clam." And I've had arguments with other improvisers that insist that improvisation is, you know, having to play a certain way with follow the rules, follow the scales, follow the, you know, whatever, and that's fine. You do that. I have a different interpretation. And another example, I played on a, it was a live concert. It was recorded with a rock star somewhere. And I had a solo spot, and I played it, and I did my thing, which, I play through the notes, I color outside the lines, there's a lot of gray areas in what I do. And it was part of a tour, and after the tour, I had a conversation with a violinist that was also on the tour that does also a lot of improvising. And he was furious with me. He said, "You played all the wrong notes, and basically needed to tell me that I played all the wrong notes."
What a weird thing to say after the whole tour.
Yeah, well, here's what happened. Then the record came out, and they screwed up the credits, and he got the credit for that solo.
Oh, the solo he didn't like.
So.
Wow.
No. I wasn't always comfortable with improvising. I never studied composition. I didn't study jazz. I didn't study improvisation at all. I'm self-taught. And so everything that I do is pretty much unconventional. I break all the rules. I make the rules and I break them. And that allows me a certain freedom, I guess. Mm-hmm. And especially in my music, that's where my comfort zone is. I love to improvise, and I find myself even more starting off a performance with an improvisation, just to kind of tune the room. In fact, last week I zoomed into a concert in Philadelphia. And I wasn't sure what I was going to play. They said, "Oh, play like 10 minutes of your music." And there was so much going on in the world, and the only thing I could think of was to play an improvisation that was almost an intoning of or a meditation. And I don't know if I could have written it.
Right, right.
Any more than, not better, but I mean, it came out as it was supposed to come out, because it came out of my heart, and it was received in along the same lines. So again, that's another thing about when you have an audience, it's really important to establish at the beginning that line of communication.
Mm-hmm.
It's a give and take. It's not just here, let me play notes at you and you listen to the notes that I play at you. But the audience, the energies, the vibe, everything in the room that informs what the ultimately what the performance is going to be about, especially when it involves improvisation.
Yeah. And you mentioned at the beginning that not every day is like the easiest, most effortless in order to play music. Do you have any strategies that you use when you're not feeling your best, but you still have to show up and do a show?
Yeah. Sometimes I count on having, you know, if I need to get out of a funk, it's always good to have a deadline or to have a show that you have to show up on, because that changes your mentality right at the moment. And sometimes that's a big part of what you need to do to get out of that funk. Again, that's what, you know, we talked about that before, being in your mind, being in your brain,
right?
And things have a way of spiraling and becoming larger than they need to be, and those, you know, the doubts and the feelings. And so if you can sort of snap out of it, that's why I'll go take a shower, I'll go out and I'll put some reggaeton on and start dancing around just to, you know, get a different energy going. But you know, it happens to everybody. Everybody's different. They feel differently. Sometimes you have a headache. Sometimes you have a, you know, it could be allergies.
Sure.
It could be just, you know, something didn't work out so well, or for no reason. You know, you just don't feel up to what you're doing. And, you know, if you've got a job to do, then you do the job. You know, any job, whether you're, you know, a musician or, you know, a firefighter or a police officer. I mean, if you're really feeling sick and if you've got COVID, then stay the heck home. otherwise, you know, that it's good to be able to pull yourself out of it. I think then that sort of shows you that you can do it.
I feel that that's why I'm so obsessed with the outdoors and being outside. And I think you're onto something too with the, like, having a deadline. I think sometimes people take for granted, like, even the idea of having a goal. So sometimes people are sitting around floundering, wondering why they're not getting better. But if you can't clearly see what the goal is, maybe that's the gig or it's a certain technique or anything, even just telling yourself what your goal is, I think helps reframe what you're trying to go for. And then you're so much more likely to reach it. Even if you have to step out and change your vibe and get into the different spaces, when you really know what you're going for, it shapes the answer of how do you get there. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't always have to be that way, but if you need to get somewhere, if you have a destination, you need to have the address, and then you need to have whatever Google Maps to get there, right?
The Oracle.
Or you can just say, I don't know, we're just going to go for a walk and we'll see where we end up. And that's okay too. Again, it's all about context.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a deadline, if there's a purpose, and especially if there are other people that are relying on you, things get done. Things will get done because I take that very seriously. I'll leave something a little bit longer. Like, one of my projects is to get some get my music that has been around and not self-published, to get it out into into the market where other people can find it. And I've been doing that, but it's taking me longer because I have to. It's for me. It's mm-hmm. a personal thing. And I just need to make myself do it. So that's what I'm going to do tomorrow morning. So you can check back with me to see if I did it. This is one of my favorite effects. I won't tell you. You can figure it out.
All right.
So here's my instrument, Yamaha YEV, which you know well, except mine's a special customized version.
That I do.
Yeah.
Love yours. It's the only one that's viola sized, right?
It is. It is. Amazing. That's my true viola, my violinness. That's what, you know. And then I press this button right at my foot here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to display a little bit of the last section of No Ordinary Window, just so you can hear what it sounds live, and then you can continue it. This is from my album, No Ordinary Window. And just this is a particularly fabulous effect that I use that's got all kinds of pitch shifting and delay and resonance, and it's got the whole everything.
Oh, here we go. That was so cool. I happen to know that you're using an Eventide H9, and that thing is super cool, and you have been a big influence in convincing me that I also need one. So,
yeah.
Thank you for all that inspiration.
Quality is quality, and there's so much in there, and you'll make it your own. That's the thing. You know, you have a palette of sound, but you're going to make it your own, even, you know, sounds out of the box, and they'll become Andy Reinerisms very soon.
Yes. Well, we love the Martha Mookism. So thank you for sharing that. And where can we hear the rest of the piece, and where can we check out your music?
Yeah. So any of your favorite streaming, or go to Bandcamp and buy it. Support <That's right. laughs> support an artist.
Martha Mook. MOOKE, MarthaMook.bandcamp.com. You've got, it looks to me like 8 albums up here. So that's the place with the most supportive deal for artists. So check out Martha wherever you listen, but especially on Bandcamp.
But No Ordinary Window, you can download it, you can stream it, and, No Ordinary Window, as in looking out to the world, looking window to the soul, window of opportunity. So make your own window. And for all you, you know, string players that suck and don't suck and just want to keep doing what you're doing. Hey, come to New Jersey City University for the multi-style strings program.
Yeah, where do we learn more about that? Is there a website that we can point people towards?
Yes, I will. I'll give you the website, and it's njcu.edu. But there, you have to go to find the music theater and dance department and look for strings. And there's a really cool video with folks like Michael League from Snarky Puppy and Black Violin that think this is a really cool program.
Yeah. And they can also learn more about you at marthamook.com. It looks like they can join your email list, so we all highly recommend that. Are you on? I'm pretty sure you're on Instagram too. Is that also?
I am. I'm Elek Viola.
E-L-E-C Viola.
Right. What I'd love for people to do is go through my Instagram, find the picture of me and David Bowie, and send me a note.
Nice. Well, do you have any final thoughts?
This has been great. It's always lovely to talk with you, Andy, and we'll have to do some crazy playing together sometime.
Let's do it. That would be awesome. No one ever said crossing the River of Suck would be easy, or that you had to do it alone. So I want to thank you for tuning in and giving it a chance. You can join the River of Suck swim team for just $1 a month at riverofsuckswimteam.com. Get all kinds of bonus content and support this podcast's very existence in the multiverse or the universe or whatever verse you tend to find yourself in. I want to thank Martha Mook for being an amazing guest. You know, for someone who goes so far out, you're very solidly grounded in reality and what it means to be a human. So I appreciate you. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Andy. Thanks so much. And everybody stay well. Stay creative.
Till next time.
Keep swimming.
Yeah. We'll roll the applause tape.